Growing up, I loved playing computer games, but I have not found something in adulthood that scratches that same itch. Video games don't do it. I can't use that controller. It's just not it for me. But oh my goodness, I am so glad I recently started playing June's Journey. Okay, June's Journey is like I Spy meets Carmen Sandiego, meets The Sims, meets horror movies. It's so wild and it's so, so fun to play. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game with a captivating detective story taking you back to the glamour of the 1920s with a diverse cast of characters. Each new scene takes you further through a thrilling murder mystery story that sets the main protagonist, June Parker, on a quest to solve the murder of her sister and uncover her family's many secrets. June is fabulous. She has a fabulous little hat and feather in her cap. She's at this family estate on this gorgeous island that you can decorate, which you know that I love to do. And then as you're going, you go into different rooms of the house. You find clues that are going to lead to the suspicious murder of June's sister and brother-in-law. It's so dark. Like, you're looking for clues inside of a murder scene photo. But also, all I want to do is find the trophy and the riding crop and the muddy footprint that might be a clue about, wait, was there another person there? It's so intriguing. It's so fun. I love playing it. At the end of the day, just sitting on the couch, you know, that state of mind where you're not ready to go to bed yet. You don't want to be watching TV anymore. It's sort of just background noise. I want to be looking around my little island for clues. And that's why I love having June's Journey. Right now, I'm in the chapter where we are really uncovering some salacious information. There seems to have been a third person there the night of the murder. And that is not what we believed at the beginning. So, you know, I'm ready to figure out more about this mystery third person because I think it might be the key to everything. And so you better believe I'm about to dive back in, and you can do just the same. Escape reality and immerse yourself in the world of June Parker. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
This is Emily,
Henley,
and Sammy,
and you're listening to Too Scary, Didn't Watch.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Too Scary Didn't Watch, the horror movie recap podcast for those too scared to watch for themselves. I'm Emily, and I am too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Henley, and I'm also too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Sammy, and I love watching scary movies, and so I watch them so that you don't have to. And we got a crazy one for you today that I think you're going to really like. And if you would like to jump straight to that recap, we got timestamps in the episode notes. But first, I got to ask my beautiful co-hosts, did anything scary happen to you guys this week?
Beautiful. That is a that's a triggering word for me right now.
Really?
You guys, I'm going to maybe blow up one of our advertisers right now.
Oh.
But we haven't.
Sammy goes, oh, little nervous.
They haven't been an advertiser with us for a long time. So I feel like it's okay. And I also feel like I really need to speak my truth.
You need to speak your truth.
All right. Yeah.
That's why you can trust us.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. I don't want anyone to ever think that we don't fully believe in who we're advertising. Anyway, so I had used Nutrafol before and I thought that it worked. During my first pregnancy when I lost all my hair. I thought it was helping.
Yeah, you did like it.
I really thought it was helping. Okay, so I started taking it in July because I was like, I'm going to get ahead of this crazy hair loss that happens around month 3 postpartum. Been taking it religiously since July. It has done fucking nothing. Absolutely nothing. It's worse this time. It's worse. My hair, I've lost 50% of it. It's gone.
I got to say, I'm looking at you and it's gone. I see more than 50% of your hair.
What do you mean? What all you can see I guess front of my head.
I guess I'm imagining like a cross section, like you lost the whole backside like of your head. You mean you're 50% thinner.
50% density. I lost most of it around my crown. So I'm like really bald, like in around my temples. And then I just feel like overall it is significantly less hair happening. It's okay. It's fine. It will grow back. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
I've gone through this rodeo before. There are way worse things to be worried about. But I will just say, I spent so much time thinking that Nutrafol was going to solve my problems.
Oh, man.
It's hard to be let down by a product that's really, really
hard. I wish products could solve everything in my life. I'm so upset when I can't find a product to solve my problems. Yep. Like, what the hell are products for if not to make my life smooth sailing?
I know. So, unfortunately for me, hopefully other people have had more success, but it simply didn't work for me. And I felt like, miracles aren't real.
Oh, no. That's tough.
God,
I'm really sorry.
Well, damn. Well, I feel like your hair looks good. I know that's not
you just saw it.
How you are feeling.
In the flesh.
Yeah, she saw it.
I think you look great.
Thanks. I love you.
And those hormones are just, it's no joke.
That's a lot.
Yeah. It's a lot. Sometimes a product can't fight nature.
Mm-hmm.
You know? You wish it could. Mm-hmm.
You wish it could. They like to tell you it can, but sometimes it can't. And I hate that for you. I'm sorry. That's scary.
Okay, you guys go. Tell me about your weeks.
I quit my job. Scary as hell.
You were scared.
I was really scared to put in my notice. It's a scary thing to do. I have another job, which is why I quit my job. And I'm very excited about that. But it was very scary to put in my notice. And then a scary thing happened that I was not expecting, which is that they like tried to negotiate, which was not my plan. I wasn't like trying to play it hard with them or whatever. That's not the right.
Play hardball.
That's the one.
Play it hard with them.
Sorry, play it hard with them. Clearly, that's not what I was trying to do. I don't even know what it is. And it made it really stressful. Like I kept having conversations with my managers about like, what could you, you know, what could you want if you were going to stay and what can we do? But I was like, I already have another job. Like, what am I supposed to, I can't have two jobs.
My advice was you should tell them that they have to fire everyone who told you your hair looked better before you dyed it brown.
I should have made it about the hair. I really should have. It was a little missed opportunity. But it just, it felt like, and also, you know, there are a lot of reasons why I left this job. The main one is that I've been in product development in denim, and I've wanted to be in design. That's what I went back to school for. That's what I want to do. I got a design job. Very excited. But there are other reasons why I left. But all of a sudden this week, they all went away. Like, it was like how when you're at the end of a relationship, all of a sudden your partner is the perfect partner. And you're like,
wait, what am I doing?
I wanted to break up with them. And it just made me feel so insane that I was like, I guess this is a great job. And I'm a lunatic for trying to leave it. And it was really, it made me feel really, really wild. But Friday came around and I stuck to my guns. I sat back down. I said, thank you so much. I am leaving. Sent in my formal resignation. My last day will be this upcoming Friday. It's
great.
Been a
good
wild
for
week.
You. It's,
and yeah, I'm really excited.
It was the right choice. Thank it was you. The right choice.
It was the right choice. But I wasn't, I also was like, why also were they trying so hard to get me to stay? Like, which isn't to say that I don't think I'm good, but I was also like, what is this? Just let me leave. It was weird.
I don't know.
It's a weird experience.
What's their turnover like there since you've been there? I just think they probably know that they're not offering good enough.
I think they probably know. And it's hard to fill the spot, and it's hard to start over, and nobody wants to do that. So yep. I think, yeah, I mean, I'm a fun hang. So I get that too.
Exactly.
But, you know, a new chapter. It's exciting. It's scary. We're going to see. Maybe it's going to totally suck, but I like to know what's on the other side of things, you know?
Yeah.
So we're going to try it out.
Great. I'm excited for you.
Me too.
I want you to be in Thank design.
You. I
You're
do too.
Languishing in product development.
I was absolutely languishing. wasting away. So we'll see. Maybe I'll be coming back to myself, which is an exciting thing. Sammy, how's your hair? How's your job? What's going on?
Hair is good. Job. What job, you know?
Yeah, I love that. And yes, correct.
And you guys know that I love a man named Keanu Reeves.
Mm. Yes.
So much that I got a tattoo related to The Matrix that I'm since getting removed. And that's, you know,
it's not Keanu's fault.
I feel very guilty about it. It's not about Keanu. And it's not about The Matrix. I still love The Matrix. It's tattoo placement. We don't have to get too much into it. But point is, I love Keanu Reeves and I love him so much. And people know I love him so much that this week I started getting texts because he is filming near my house. And so I got one morning, I'm just sitting on my couch playing my daily hour of phone games, drinking my coffee in the morning, and get a text. Keanu Reeves is at Mustard Seed Cafe, which is like a 10-minute drive from my house. It's very close. And I got this jolt of, you know, adrenaline, like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Do I go over there? And then I just pictured going there and was like, I think it might ruin my whole day. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I also think like going to like try to peek at someone filming a thing is like not
it's a good experience.
It's a blow to your dignity.
Yes.
It's a blow to your dignity.
It's exactly that. And so I
don't want to know that you did it.
I think I would come home and just feel really gross and weird and sad. And so yeah. I didn't go, but then I got more updates throughout the day. Like, oh, he's over here now. Like he was shooting where my apartment was. I got it from multiple sources.
Whoa.
People know I love Keanu. And so I got a lot of.
And he was out and about this week in the Los Feliz, Silver Lake part of town. So maybe it'll happen naturally.
That's what I was going to say. If I saw him naturally, great. I'm not about. I just don't think that I can get in my car and go look at Keanu Reeves from a distance and then go back home and go about the rest of my day. It just doesn't feel right, you know?
No.
Yeah,
no.
I think it's...
No. You're like trying to get a picture of him like zooming in so much on your phone, zooming.
When
it's
you
like
try
so
to take
pixelated.
A picture of the moon and it's like,
exactly.
Look at this picture of the moon I got.
Or fireworks.
It just lives on your phone for like 2 years and then you're like, what the hell is this? I don't need this.
God. Or I post it on an Instagram story and everyone's like, what? Who is that? It'd be so embarrassing.
Yeah, I think he made the right choice. I really do.
I do think so as well. But it is a little scary to know that he was around here and I didn't see him. But I think it would have been scarier to see him and then come home and try to pretend like that was just like a normal way to start my day. So I'm glad I didn't do it. But
yeah,
smart.
But yeah, getting my tattoo removed and now refusing to go see him in person is just like, do I even like him?
refusing to go see him. He invited you and you said no.
Just really shaking my sense of self on a Thursday morning, whenever it was. But another scary thing happened to me this week, which is that I watched a pretty spooky movie called Prince of Darkness, came out in 1987, written and directed by John Carpenter. Ever heard of him?
Hoo-hoo!
Starring Donald Pleasance, Lisa Blount, Victor Wong, Jameson Parker, and Dennis Dunn. It is available to rent on VOD. And we have a guest with us today to discuss this freaky film. He is a New York Times columnist and host of the podcast Unclear and Present Danger. Jamel Bowie, thank you for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Can I share something scary? Can I?
Yes.
In fact, please.
You are required to.
We demand
it. Right. Well, one thing, it's scary. One thing, Sammy, you reminded me of a time when I walked into a room. It was like a party. And on the couch, this was in the Times office. And on the couch, like the weird, gross couch in the office, was sitting and having a conversation with someone, Lucy Liu.
Whoa. On a gross couch?
Yeah, on a gross couch.
I can't even picture it.
And I had like this feeling of just like complete terror.
Yeah, it's like your brain doesn't know what to do with it. I'm just like, it's shattering my sense of reality. Like, you're not supposed to be here in person.
Right.
You're supposed to be on the other side of a screen.
Like, you're not really real. And now all of a sudden I feel like I'm 14.
I'm a loser.
If you are real, what the fuck am I?
But the scary thing is, I guess this is also job related. I was like at a thing, and I was walking to grab a cup of coffee, and I noticed that one of my friends, who's a law professor, was talking to a right-wing federal judge, who I'm not going to name, who's an insane person, like genuinely crazy right-wing federal judge. And they're chatting, and as I walk by, my friend goes, "Hey, Jamel, do you want to talk about Clarence Thomas with us?" In that voice of kind of like,
"Oh my God!"
In that voice of like,
"Help me,
yeah, help me, please join this conversation so I can get out of it." And then I dutifully spoke to this right wing federal judge for like 15 minutes about Clarence Thomas. The whole time trying to be like,
Jesus.
"We're in a nonpartisan atmosphere, so I'm not gonna say anything to give away that I think Clarence Thomas is bad." So that was unpleasant. And
that's a tricky
and spooky
little spot.
That is spooky. That is a really spooky
It's honestly spooky.
What was the right-wing federal judge's point of view on Clarence Thomas?
Oh, he loves
full
him.
Support?
He thinks he's full support? Yeah, he thinks he's like the greatest guy who ever lived.
Oh,
the
man.
The embodiment of the Constitution.
Did your friend slip out of the conversation?
Yeah. 5 minutes later.
Wow. And you were stuck for an additional 10 minutes. But they had probably already been in it for a while, I guess. So they were just like, no, please,
I mean,
she
deserved to get out of there for a bit.
She needed to get out of there.
Was it Emily Bazelon?
It was not Emily Bazelon.
You said law professor and she and... Okay, so I have to say, before we truly get into it, Jamel, I'm such a huge fan of yours. I cannot believe you're on our podcast right now. I'm so nervous.
You're doing great.
You need to be nervous. I wore my Star Trek Academy, Starfleet Academy hat just to sort of like let people know I'm not a serious person.
Okay, great. Yeah. Phew. My first like podcast obsession was Slate Political Gabfest. For like 10 years, I listened weekly. And you were a frequent guest, obviously. And so I've been listening to you for a long time, and I'm just so glad you're here. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Well, Jamel, what's your relationship to horror movies? You know, are you a fan? That's the only question I could think to ask.
Yeah.
It ends there.
I am a fan of horror movies, but not in like... It's weird. Not in like a lifelong horror fan, but then as I say that, I like flash back to watching like Slumber Party Massacre 3 at my friend's house when I'm like 14, 13 actually. So like I've been watching horror movies a long time, but I don't think I'd ever call myself a horror movie fan until relatively recently when this may have been during the pandemic. At some point in the last like 5 years, I was like, I've never seen all of the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. I've never seen all of the Halloween movies. I've never seen all of the Friday the 13th, like so on and so forth. So I just sort of like started watching them in a kind of marathon and ended up, you know, knocking out like 6 or 7 of these franchises and came to really appreciate like horror movies and really like them and really like kind of the whole thing. So I call myself a horror fan now, but I'm not like... I'm not someone who has like a lifelong love, and although I think I know more than the typical movie watcher, I wouldn't call myself like an expert either.
Which is your favorite of the franchises? I have not watched any of them all the way through yet either, so this is inspiring.
I think my favorite of like the classic franchises really is the Nightmare on Elm Street series, which like its average quality is pretty high. Freddy is just kind of like a great character. Like I love that guy.
He's funny.
He's so fun.
Yeah, Freddy's
a funny guy. Although I do think Michael Myers is funny.
personally.
Yeah, Emily has a weird thing with Michael Myers that we're still trying to unpack.
I don't think he's trying to be, but I think he's very funny.
He loves to just stand there and look at you.
His vibe is so funny.
I do think it's really funny in the first Halloween when he's just like driving in the car and sort of like,
yeah,
like he's just driving like a dude.
He's just the most obvious guy that there's ever been. Anyway,
I get that. No, I like Freddy a lot, but then those movies, you know, like the first one is a classic and the third and fourth ones are actually like really good and fun. And the last one, or the last sort of like proper one, A New Nightmare, is terrific. And, you know, I don't know. I like the cast of actors that come back and are recurring in the series. And I like all the craziness of it. So Nightmare on Elm Street, but then of like various other franchises, there are things that I like quite a bit. So like, I really like Leprechaun in the Hood, which is like weirdly kind of great.
Okay.
It's weirdly sort of like, hey, if you've watched Menace to Society or New Jack City, put on Leprechaun in the Hood.
Okay. <It's> like, I mean, St. Patrick's Day coming up.
Yeah. Kind of fits.
That's true.
I like Hellraiser quite a bit. The rest of the one aren't very good, but I love Hellraiser.
I love Hellraiser.
I like the Saw movies a lot. That's actually kind of a problem because I frequently say to my kids, you want to play a game?
No, that's not okay. That is illegal.
No, you're allowed. You're allowed.
That's very funny. I have watched the second of the Nightmare on Elm Street, but I stopped there and I've heard the third is really fun. And so I think I'm going to continue that with that one. I'm feeling inspired.
You should go for it.
Because I feel like I know the Jason ones go really off the rails and are mostly just bad and not even fun bad, even though the titles are so incredible. Like Jason Takes Manhattan, like how could that not be a perfect film?
Right. But he's like in Manhattan for 10 minutes. He's like in Midtown for 5 minutes.
Oh, what a lie.
It mostly takes place on a boat. And like those 5 minutes are pretty great. It's pretty cool when he's in New York, but you know, you're thinking,
they said it would be the whole thing.
Right. You're thinking Jason's going to be, like, you know, in the West Village. He's going to be, you know.
Yeah, let him see the city, you know?
Why, it's going to be like a Law and Order episode.
Yeah. Put him on the train. Get him over to Brooklyn. Like, I want to see him going all around.
We call ourselves vessel heads here on the podcast. So him being on a boat is also pretty interesting to me. So yeah. I don't know. Now I'm confused. Cause yeah, I always assumed that all of the franchises got kind of bad and unwatchable. And I think some of them probably are, but I think there's probably a little bit of merit in all of them.
Yeah. There's merit in all of them. And often I find they start getting, like in the case of the Friday the 13th, they kind of just, it's like repeat doing the same thing over and over again until Jason X, the one that's in space, which I actually think is kind of good. People think it's terrible, but I think it's like, oh, this is sort of interesting. But a lot of them, they end up getting just deeper in their mythologies, which can be good or bad. Like in the case of Nightmare on Elm Street, it gets really deep into sort of like the mythology of Freddy. And I don't think that's very compelling. Just, I don't care about the mythology. I just want to see this kid. Like, I just want to see this guy kill kids. Like, I want to see him kill teens. So whatever you need to do to get me to a point where Freddy's in some teen's dream and he's like,
you like video games
and he plays them and the kid, I don't know, dies in like a Mario level. Like that is what I want.
Yes. Yes.
Sometimes the mythology kind of becomes so convoluted that I find it enjoyable. In the Saw movies, by like Saw 4 or 5, it's just like, it's like this hyper melodramatic thing. And I think that's, I find that compelling.
Yeah, my partner just did a project where he watched all of the Saw movies over the span of like 2 weeks. And he really got deep in that whole world and it sort of took over his brain in an interesting way.
He and I went and saw X or Saw 10 together and I was like, okay, tell me everything I need to know, because I had only seen Saw 1 and Saw 2. And it's like, oh, you don't need to know any of it, actually. Once we watched the movie, he like spent a long time telling it to me, and then during the movie I was like, oh, it didn't reference really any of that. I mean, I think there was like maybe one or two that I didn't catch, but made me laugh.
Just, I guess, one last on this point. The franchise I'd like to see come back is Final Destination.
Yes.
Yes.
Wait,
yes.
I think it might be. Isn't there another one? I think there might be one in the works.
If it's not confirmed, it's at least rumored because we've had this conversation before. Yes. Final Destination is a perfect franchise.
I love
it. And to your point, I just want to see the kooky little ways that death is going to make people think flattened
by panes of glass.
And be like, it's going to be this. Just kidding. Nope. It's you're flattened by a pane of glass. Like, that's all I want. Over and over and over again.
Absolutely pancaked.
Yeah. I think it's coming back. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. We love Final Destination. Well, Jamel, you picked this movie, Prince of Darkness. Could you tell us your relationship with this movie? What made you choose it?
I'm a big John Carpenter fan. Love John Carpenter. That is like a lifelong thing. I remember seeing Escape from New York with my dad. We rented it at Blockbuster and watched it. And this is my favorite Carpenter movie. I don't think it's the best John Carpenter movie, but it is my personal favorite. Some of that is because I think that even if it's not like the absolute pinnacle of its work, I feel like it's like the most Carpenter movie. It's like
I love that
total guerrilla filmmaking, right? Sort of like, you know, we're just in this one building, as cheap as I can possibly make it. Every effect we're gonna do in camera. We're going to have like Carpenter's preoccupation with like strange metaphysical stuff, but also science. It's sort of like all of John Carpenter's like little things in a single movie. And I really like that. And I also just find it as a kid who grew up very much in church, like I was like a church kid. Anything that's sort of like, hey, maybe demons are real, kind of I find quite spooky.
Yes, we've heard that before from like previous guests that if you're raised with, you know, a religious upbringing, that religious horror tends to freak you out. It never really leaves you.
Yeah. It's a very interesting thing.
So in this case, you know, demons being a vat of goo, of ectoplasm.
I'm intrigued.
That is the manifestation of Satan on Earth, and it drives everyone insane. That to me is pretty scary.
There's some scary stuff in this movie. Yeah. I was scared as well. This was my first time seeing it. I hadn't even heard of it. It's the second movie in John Carpenter's Apocalypse trilogy. So the first is The Thing. So obviously I
love The Thing.
Had heard of that, seen that. And the third is In the Mouth of Madness, which is one that we get requested a lot. We will be doing eventually.
Great movie. Oh, I'm so glad we're doing this before we do that, because that's been on our list for a while. Joel really wants to do that with us. And I'm so glad we get to get the middle of the trilogy.
Yeah, me too. I'm very glad you picked this because, I didn't even know it existed. I'll give us some trivia before we get into the recap. This movie has a 62% on Rotten Tomatoes, 50% on Metacritic, and a 6.7 on IMDb. Mm. Kind of harsh ratings. I was a little surprised by that. Budget was $3 million, made $14.2 million. And this was, John Carpenter made this independently after Big Trouble in Little China didn't do well financially. I love Big Trouble in Little China. Huh. And he was frustrated working with the studios. So I think kind of probably like you were saying, Jamel, it probably was him just being like, I'm going to make the movie that I want to make.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense why it would feel that way if he just did it all his own.
It's sort of time. I feel like one of the I don't know if he would call this sad, but one of the funny things about his career, and it's sort of like he does one of these small, you know, inexpensive, like really fun movies. They're hits, they make a ton of money, and then studios are like, hey, you want like real money to make like a big movie? And he's like, yeah, sure. And then he does it and no one likes
It does feel like that's an interesting cycle that happened. Like, I feel like a similar thing happened with Robert Eggers for
Northman.
The Northman. Yeah, where all of a sudden he had like this huge studio budget and it was like, I don't feel like it hit the same way.
Right.
His previous movies.
Money doesn't solve creativity problems.
Wow, money products don't solve everything. Money doesn't solve everything. What the fuck is going on? I don't know what to believe.
The promise of capitalism isn't working?
No,
I don't know.
That can't be
No.
So there are a number of actors in this film that John Carpenter had worked with before and continued to work with again, like Donald Pleasance is in Halloween and Escape from New York. And Dennis Dunn and Victor Wong were both in Big Trouble in Little China.
He apparently specifically casted soap opera actors because they would be accustomed to working very quickly.
Oh, that's so smart.
They're able to get a lot done in a very short amount of time. And also they're like seasoned, but they're not really familiar to most people. So if someone like dies on screen, it can be surprising.
Oh, I love that. That's so smart.
I was just listening to Tina Fey on Las Culturistas, and she was saying that their favorite people to have on SNL, their favorite hosts, always had a background in soaps because they knew how to give big reactions. They took direction really well, and they were also used to working really fast. This is coming up, man.
Interesting.
Soap stars.
Very cool.
Unsung heroes. Unsung heroes of the entertainment world.
Okay, so we would watch the trailer right now, but this trailer shows the end of the movie. So we're going to save that for the end of the episode. If you want to watch our trailer reaction, you can go to our Patreon at patreon.com/TSDW podcast. So yeah, without further ado, let's get into this recap. Do we all feel ready? Prince of Darkness, Satan Slime.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
I can't wait. Slime. Demon Slime. Very
ready. Satan Slime also sounds like a beverage, you know?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. From like specifically the 80s, right, late 80s, right, early 90s. Right. Satan Slime.
All right, let's do it.
I have tried a lot of meal kits in my day because I don't like to cook. I need as much help as I can get when it comes to meal times. But a lot of the kits I've tried, you know, they leave a little something to be desired. They're not super great quality, or maybe there's not great variety, or they're feel just kind of unhealthy. So imagine my surprise when I found Marley Spoon and discovered it doesn't have to be that way. You can have it all. I'm so happy this podcast is sponsored by Marley Spoon. They created the best tasting meal kit money can buy, and with my code TOOSCARY, you can get up to 25 free meals. They have over 100 meals to choose from each week, so you will not be getting bored. Last night, I made a shrimp burrito bowl that was so good, and tonight I'm making a Shion-style cumin turkey burger with pickled veggies and five-spice fries. Excuse me, am I a five-star chef? You have any idea how boring all the stuff I usually make is? It's such a treat. And usually for something like this, I would pay probably $40 to have something delivered to me, and it would probably be gross and soggy by the time it got here anyways. So thank God for Marley Spoon. And you can customize many of the recipes. So whether you're looking for vegetarian, family-friendly, low-carb, they got you covered. They also have an online market of pantry essentials like snacks and ready-to-eat options. I'm telling you, you can have it all. I got a kit to make cookies in my first box. So experience the most personalized meal kit today with Marley Spoon. Head to marleyspoon.com/offer/too-scary and use code TOOSCARY for up to 25 free meals. That's right, up to 25 free meals with Marley Spoon. One last time, that's marleyspoon.com/offer/too-scary for up to 25 free meals. And make sure you use my promo code TOOSCARY so they know I sent you.
All right, you guys, I'm here again to talk to you about Skims, except this time, not about their underwear, this time about their t-shirts. Have you guys tried their t-shirts? Because I hadn't until recently, and holy shit, I have been on the quest to find the perfect t-shirt for my entire adult life. And little did I know, they were just hiding at skims.com. So I have their cotton jersey long sleeve t-shirt in kind of this like deep blue, gorgeous color. And it's a very form-fitting t-shirt that's extremely flattering. I've worn it over and over and over again since I got it, and it really holds up in the wash. You can just throw it in the washing machine, holds up, keeps its shape. The quality of the fabric is so good. I also have the boyfriend t-shirt. That one's so cozy, more relaxed. I just am obsessed with them, and now I want all of them. So I will slowly be amassing my collection of Skims t-shirts for the rest of my goddamn life. Anyway, so I really can't recommend them enough. Go to skims.com to shop them, and they're available in sizes extra, extra small to 4X. Plus, you get free shipping on orders over $75. And if you haven't yet, be sure to let them know that Too Scary Didn't Watch sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select Too Scary Didn't Watch in the drop-down menu that follows.
My mom has had a pretty wild life, a lot of interesting stuff. She was in a couple popular bands in South Africa in the 80s. She's traveled all around the world, and she is so full of stories that I'm still finding out new things about her. So this Mother's Day, I know just what to get her. It's called Storyworth, and Storyworth helps you preserve those memories and stories from your mom or mother figure for years to come. Here's how it works. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a question. You can help choose the questions if you'd like. Some that I've asked my mom are, what was your first boss like? What were your favorite toys as a child? And all they need to do is respond to the email with a story. It can be long or short. They can even include pictures if they want. Sky's the limit. So you can enjoy their retelling of your favorite stories and new stories you've never heard before. After a year, Storyworth compiles all their stories into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book that you'll be able to share and revisit for generations to come. I love this. I love having these kinds of physical items, whether it's a journal or a photo book. I know we can have all this stuff on our phones now or the computer, but it's just not the same. Having something actually tangible is just the best. So give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift that you'll all cherish for years, Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/too scary. That's storyworth.com/too scary to save $10 on your first purchase.
The seasons are changing. We are starting to have warm days in Los Angeles. And if you're like me, every time the seasons change, I realize I actually hate every single thing I own and need to swap everything out. And that is a daunting task, but imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. Like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50 for those places where it is still chilly, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, yes, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, so you can feel great about the items that you are purchasing. For example, I purchased a pair of clogs. They are so comfortable. I have lusted after a pair of suede clogs for so long. They're pricey other places, and I just could never justify it for shoes that I'm basically treating like outdoor slippers. And I got a pair at Quince. They are amazing. I truly love them. So if you too would like to be walking around in gorgeous pieces that make you feel happy and comfortable at a price that you can feel good about, go to Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/too scary for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/too scary to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/too scary.
So we begin with a priest dying, or seemingly already dead, holding a small chest in his hands. There's a shot of a moon and, you know, a John Carpenter score playing, and another priest arrives. This is Donald Pleasance. His character is not given a name. He'll just be referred to as the priest. And he discovers this other dead priest and finds a little journal with some writing in it. And we see a phrase that says, the sleeper awakens. There's a skeleton key inside of this chest that the priest was holding. It's kind of a ominous tone here. Something weird is going on.
Yeah. Really have to emphasize the score is just sort of going crazy this entire time. I think for like the first 25 minutes of this movie, like the score is almost constant. The Carpenter, oh, wow. Like the pulsating synthesized score. Yeah,
and like keys that all of a sudden go like, right. You know, like a lot, like like a cat walked on the piano sort of vibe.
Which does create this sort of like anxiety or sort of like, what is actually happening in this movie? But Donald Pleasance, he's reading the scroll. The priest who died belonged to something called the Brotherhood of Sleep. Mm-hmm. And the note brings him to a abandoned parish or monastery or something in Los Angeles where there is something inside, but you don't know what that thing is yet. I believe at this point it's sort of a cut to a college campus or something, a university campus. Mm-hmm. We see Victor Wong sort of walking, I guess, into his classroom. The camera cuts and shows you some ants with unusual activity.
Yeah, that's a lot of ants. It's grossed me out.
A lot of ants behaving strangely, perhaps a sign of something to come. but we are introduced to Victor Wong's or Professor Professor Howard Byrack's physics class. A bunch of physics grad students, all very young. Pretty good looking, and he is giving a physics lesson.
I was trying to comprehend this lesson, which was it didn't work out great for me. he's talking a bit about how our perception of time is not correct, and our logic of the universe is like not what we thought. All very right. Scary ideas.
He's alluding. This is. I'm going to reveal myself to be a big nerd. This is the 80s are around the time where there are these like breakthroughs being made and sort of like theoretical physics. And he's describing like a set of theories about the behavior of atoms at the subatomic level. And the idea basically being sort of like the law of general relativity basically makes sense for everything, in the realm, of larger objects, right? Like sort of, there's a set of rules that are consistent when it comes to larger objects, larger celestial bodies, that kind of thing. But when you get really into the tiniest things, very small, the subatomic level, all those laws completely break down. Things stop making sense. And so the classic example of this is how light can behave as both like a wave and a set of particles. And it's sort of like, according to general relativity, this shouldn't really work. But it is a thing that is true. And so there's a lot of work that's being done in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, basically trying to figure out like why and developing theories to explain why. And so the whole monologue he gives is like an allusion to all of that stuff.
Yeah. He talked about like how time for us moves in an arrow in one direction. You're born, you age, you die. And yeah, that's not necessarily true at a
what does he say? He says level. Fruit rots, water goes downstream.
Facts, just straight up facts that we know.
Yeah. I want to say real quick, Victor Wong, an actor who I most recognize from the Three Ninjas franchise, the kid power movies from the 90s. He plays the Asian grandfather of these three white boys. It's not really
interesting. Yep.
We were making really interesting choices at that time.
Yep. I just recognize him from Big Trouble in Little China. Also great. You're just going to keep saying that I like that movie.
It's a good movie.
If we leave this episode with one thing, it's that Sammy likes Big Trouble in Little China.
So Donald Pleasance reaches out to Victor Wong's character and it's basically sort of like, listen, there's something crazy in this church and I want you guys to check it out. I want your team of physicists to come by and to see what the what is and to study this.
Not often seen combo, priest reaching out to a scientist.
No. But this, I guess the movie suggests that Victor Wong, he's been in dialogue with religious authorities in the past. He's sort of open-minded. And I think they have a prior relationship. So it's sort of like, I want your physicist to come and help out. And it's at this point that we begin to meet some of the physics students. Sort of our kind of protagonist is Jameson Parker's character, Brian Marsh. He has a great handlebar mustache. Mm-hmm. He's just like a like white guy in the 80s. I don't know.
Pretty standard white guy.
Pretty standard. We meet Lisa Blount as Catherine Danforth, sort of like they have a relationship going. So I like this movie a lot. It is problematic occasionally. And one problematic point is when Lisa and Brian are talking. Or Catherine and Brian are talking.
Yep.
Brian says something very sexist and she's like, that was very sexist. And he's like, well, that's me, certified sexist. It's like,
this part really threw me.
When you could just write that in a script and be like, that's good writing. Yeah,
right? The actor would say it and be like, what's the problem?
He says confirmed sexist and proud of it.
Right. That's right. That's right.
So.
That's how he's flirting with her. He's like, it's clear he has a big crush on her, and that's how he's deciding to flirt with her. And she like shuts down.
And he's like, what's the problem?
And he like kind of talks her out of it. And she's like, you're right. Never mind. Yeah, let's go on a date.
No, it's pretty cool. I think it's good.
Oh, very Yikes. Strange.
But okay, but the other physics students are Dennis Dunn as Walter Fong, as Susan Blanchard as Kelly. And Howard as Susan, and Yen as Lisa, Ken Wright as Lomax, Dirk Blocker as Mullins. I always love it when I see Dirk Blocker and stuff because it's sort of like, oh yeah, you're the guy from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and you have like a real career.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's also what a great name.
Great name.
Yes,
Dirk
Blocker. Hell yeah.
Jesse Lawrence Ferguson as Calder, Peter Jason as Dr. Leahy. And then Robert Grasmere, who is actually the stunt coordinator for the movie, as Frank.
Yeah, there's kind of a lot of people, but they're basically all have different specialties that will come in handy, and we're all investigating whatever's going on in here.
So there's a bit of either at the university, they're discussing this. The score, I gotta emphasize, is still just like full blast. Something to remember. Also, a strange thing happening at this church are the homeless people around it are behaving very weirdly, in like unusual ways. So that's something that's important.
Kind of staring eerily at anyone who comes in and out of the building. One woman has ants crawling on her face.
Yep.
She's completely unbothered by them.
Alice Cooper is one of the homeless people. That's sort of fun. Yeah.
That is very fun. There is a conversation between the priest and the professor at one point where he's telling him how the Brotherhood of the Sleep guarded this place. The skeleton key from the chest in the opening opens this door to the basement of this church. And he tells him that not even the Vatican knew about this place.
Right. This was like a closely guarded secret. The church had been built actually like in the 15th century, you know, Spanish missions. And so very secret. Everyone gets there and they begin to set up their equipment and they begin to kind of like check out what it is that is this closely guarded secret. And in the basement, in this like eerie room, is a large like person-sized cylinder filled with a mysterious green liquid.
Man, you saying person sized makes me a little nervous about what that liquid started as.
Yep. And certainly my first thought would not be, oh, well, that's the devil.
Yeah, it's green.
Gotta be.
Green's
seen
not,
it before.
Green's not the devil color.
He would choose red.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what the students are doing at first is they're trying to decipher some book. There's like a book full of it's in multiple languages. Pleasance shows it to them. It's in Latin, it's in Aramaic, it's in Greek. So they're trying to decipher the book. They're trying to kind of figure out what exactly this green liquid is. They're trying to date the material that is on it. They're just trying to figure out what the deal is with everything. And they discover a couple of things. The first is that the book has formulas for differential equations, for all kinds of advanced math that shouldn't exist at the point at which the book was written. Like humans hadn't figured it out yet. And so they're like, okay, what's going on? The vial, the large cylinder, is carbon dated several million years old. So that's also weird. Why is this thing so old? And what else? They manage to translate some of the languages, and what they discover is that the book is telling the actual story, basically, of like the beginnings of Christianity, which is where, where the movie goes from being, you know, like eerie and spooky to like legitimately crazy. So what we learn is that Jesus Christ was not some poor Jew in what is today Palestine. He was an extraterrestrial who came to Earth to warn humanity that the anti-God, which is what this cylinder is, was there and would destroy them all. And he was executed for heresy. And the religion that grew up basically to sort of conceal the truth of what he was actually teaching to people.
Whoa.
But his,
that's
like,
a real plot twist. That is a real plot twist in Christianity, I gotta say.
And you don't, you don't get those often.
No,
everybody pretty much says, here's what the deal is and agrees.
Yeah. And, but it's his true disciples that have been formed, the like brotherhood. What is it? The Brotherhood of Sleep. Brotherhood of Sleep that have been for generations protecting this secret.
Whoa. I am loving this. I am into this.
To be specific, the green liquid is literally Satan.
Yes.
Trapped in the vessel. The anti-god. And the liquid is also, as a result, it's sentient. It's a sentient liquid.
So this is where they got the idea for flubber.
Right. Yes. Yes. In both the, who started the original one?
I don't know. Robin Williams is in the.
That's all I got.
Yeah, that's all I got.
All I got flubber is Robin original. Williams.
It's there's a 1950s Disney movie. Is
it? No way.
Oh, this is going to drive me insane.
Is it Fred McMurray?
Yep. Fred McMurray.
Nice.
I did not know that there was an original flubber.
Me neither.
I'm trying. What else do they learn?
One of them is analyzing the container, and she discovers, this woman is named Susan. She discovers that it can only be opened from the inside because they're worried if it's toxic. Should they be taking samples of it? It might be dangerous. And she says, "I don't think we have anything to worry about because it can only be opened from the inside, so we're safe from it."
Right, we're totally safe. There's nothing we can work around it. Without any problems whatsoever, there's not going to be a single thing that causes any particular trouble about this cylinder, which I remind you again is the is actually Satan. Satan is green goo.
And they've all agreed. They all know that it's Satan.
They're kept in the dark for a while, but
okay.
I feel like. They know something is wrong. Yes. And the priest and the professor definitely know that. And they're being a little cagey about it and saying, you know, like, in good time, you'll find out what we're doing here.
Uh-huh.
But the priest is very on edge. He keeps saying things like, he's getting stronger. Don't you feel a presence in here? He can't be contained anymore. It happened last month. The earth is acting differently. We're thinking about the ants crawling around in a weird way.
Yeah.
So whatever's about to happen is inevitable. And we're the only ones here to try to stop it.
The last thing in this kind of part of the movie I want to mention is that after the revelation of what of the true story of, you know, Christianity, Professor Bayrak and the priest are talking, and this is when the notion of the anti-god actually pops up. Professor Bayrak says, "Suppose what your faith has said is essentially correct. Suppose there is a universal mind controlling everything, a god willing the behavior of every subatomic particle. Well, every particle has an antiparticle, its mirror image, its negative side. Maybe this universal mind resides in the mirror image instead of in our universe as we want it to believe. Maybe he's anti-God, bringing darkness instead of light."
This is getting really real, you guys.
That would suck if that were true.
All I can think about is God, no God. That's all I can think about.
I thought about that a lot too. God, no God.
it's at this point that things start getting hairy for the grad students. One of them, after doing his night's work, decides he's going to leave. He's going to leave and, like, you know, go to sleep somewhere. And he mm-hmm. walks into the alley outside the church. And when he walks out, he sees a pigeon that has been crucified. And he's like...
I don't know why that really freaks me out.
It's pretty freaky. Do you think they crucified a pigeon for real? A lot of times with these like older movies, you can't tell. I feel like it's probably possible.
I want to say that they didn't. I hope that they didn't crucify a pigeon.
I really hope that they didn't.
Let's say they didn't.
Pigeons are actually lovely little animals. I'd be very sad if they were.
You can paper mache a pigeon pretty easily.
Yeah. It's paper mache. That feels like the most reasonable thing that they probably did.
But he happens upon a crucified pigeon, and then he's like, okay, wow, that's weird. Doesn't turn around initially. He's like, let me go investigate this a little more. And at the point he goes to investigate, he looks forward and he sees Alice Cooper walking slowly towards him. Alice Cooper picks up a rusting bike. That just happens to be there. And then he's like, okay, strange, the grad student. So he goes to turn around. But when he turns around the other side, there's a bunch of the oddly behaving homeless people behind him, slowly walking towards him. And so he can't go back. So he starts to walk forward as Alice Cooper comes toward him. And Alice Cooper impales him with the bike and kills him.
Oh, no.
I don't know why the idea of being impaled with something rusty is even worse. It's like it doesn't matter. You're also dead. Like, but
which part of the bike?
I know. That's what the bike is like cut in half. So it's like made into a spear. Like this bike was fashioned to be half bike, half weapon.
Maybe that's the
weapon of choice. Yeah. That might be a good weapon of choice. It can be your transportation and a weapon.
It is a little cumbersome. Yeah.
But no one inside knows this happened. They're not aware of this.
Nope.
So we cut back inside, and the team is still trying to examine this thing, figure it out. Susan goes down to run some tests. And while she's running tests, she kind of gets a little transfixed by the giant cylinder, the green liquid. And all of a sudden, the green liquid sprays into her mouth, like of its own volition. A jet of it sprays into her mouth.
And, you don't want that.
It turns her into like its thrall. She's become like taken over by Satan. Their measuring tools, they have like a seismometer or something, registers a bunch of energy that's been self-directed from the cylinder. But they don't know what's going on yet. But Susan is now a thrall of Satan, and Dirk Blocker, who's also down there. The movie, I feel like they have Dirk Blocker as like a crush on Susan. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's what the movie suggests.
Because he's like looking for her right now. He's like, anybody seen Susan?
Right.
Uh-oh.
Susan's pretty cute, so I get it.
Yep.
Yeah.
But then she kills him.
Right away.
She kills him. Yeah, so that's the moment. That didn't work out.
So poor Dirk. He gets his neck broken by Satan Susan. And it's pretty quick. It's like, it's not like they don't linger, but it's pretty quick and pretty shocking because he's just sort of like looking for her, and then all of a sudden, like, break his neck. He's donezo. So Susan then goes looking for other people to basically infect. Lisa, not Lisa Blount, but the character Lisa, played by Anne Yen, is in a room, like typing on a computer or something. She's like working.
She's like resting because there's like a room with a cot in it. Because this is the middle of the night. They say at one point it's like 3:30.
And they're still at the church?
Yeah, yes, they have to stay here. They've been asked to be here like all weekend long. They've all brought overnight bags. This is important stuff. We're not allowed to go home till this is done. So there's a place for them to sleep. And yeah, Lisa's in there taking a little rest. And Susan like very slowly climbs on top of her. And she doesn't like react right away, but then she says, as Susan is right in her face, she goes, excuse me, but, and then Susan just projectile vomits green goo into her mouth.
Ew. Disgusting.
She's
disgusting.
Like, excuse me.
But. Being so polite.
It's very funny to wait until someone is like fully in your face to say, excuse me.
One of the characters, Frank, well, a bunch of them, Frank, Lomax, and I think Dennis, are outside and they're chatting, they're talking. And Frank is like, I think this is all nonsense. I think we're wasting our time. I'm going to leave. While he's kind of standing up, the other two go back inside. While he's kind of standing outside, mulling his next decision, one of the homeless woman, grabs a pair of shears, it looks like, runs up to him and stabs him to death. Very violently. So we know that the homeless people around are also sort of under the thrall of the green goo, which I need to correct something. The green goo is Satan, not anti-God. And Satan is the son of anti-God.
So Satan is like the Jesus.
Right, right.
Parallel.
This is like the goo is like the anti-Christ. And then there's the anti-God that is in this subatomic mirror universe. Mirror universe, this is an important point. Subatomic mirror universe. So Frank is killed. Who else gets, and then like pretty much in quick succession, a bunch of the grad students I'm going to call it infected by Satan.
Yeah.
Which sounds like what happens after you listen to too much heavy metal. I don't know.
They've been infected by Satan.
They've been absolutely infected by Satan.
Right after Frank dies, there is a scene where Walter falls asleep for a moment and we see a glimpse of this footage that looks grainier and strange of the outside of the church with a cloaked figure coming out of it that we can't quite see, and some audio voice saying, "This is not a dream. You are receiving this broadcast as a dream. We are transmitting from year 19. And then he wakes up and just get a little taste of that.
Yeah.
Huh.
Listeners who are into 90s trip hop will recognize that bit of audio from the beginning of DJ Shadow's introduction. It's like the first thing on the record. I don't know.
It does seem like a good thing to sample. Makes sense that it's out there.
Yeah. It's a great sample. But yes, so Walter has this dream, and this dream, like all the survivors start to have this dream. It's a recurring dream for everyone who is not yet infected.
Mm. So sometimes we're killing people, sometimes we're infecting.
Right.
Okay.
Mullins, Lisa, Calder, Dr. Leahy are all get infected. And they all start, once infected, they start sort of like either kind of shambling around looking for others to infect, kind of like
the building is kind of big, so it's not like not everyone is scared, right? Like this is usually happening.
They don't necessarily know.
They don't know that it's going on.
Right, right.
Okay.
And at one point there's a woman named Kelly who wants to go lay down, and she's talking to Catherine. Catherine is the one that Brian has a crush on from the beginning, and she's looking at the differential equations. Her specialty seems to be like the kind of math, figuring out these math equations. Kelly comes in to tell Catherine she's tired. She's going to lay down. This is where she says 3:30 in the morning. I got to lay down. Catherine notices a bruise on her arm, and we had seen this bruise for a second earlier. Catherine says, "What is that? Let me take a look at it." This bruise is now has a clearly like a symbol raised from it, as if it's a burn. That's a little curly cross shape that would never be natural in a bruise. And she's like, "Oh, this it's just a bruise. Like I bumped into something earlier," and we all just kind of brush that off. She's like, "All right, go lay down. Yeah, have a good rest."
It doesn't seem unusual to anyone.
Yeah. I'm like, all right.
Well, Kelly is resting. I'm trying to think of, because this is basically where like things really start to pick up. We're like an hour into the movie. There's like not that much left in the movie, left like a half hour left, and things really begin to pick up at this point.
See Lisa typing. Like unblinking.
That's right. There are two things that happen before everything kind of totally hell completely breaks loose. First is that who walks in? Who
Calder.
Walks in on Lisa? Calder walks in
Mona
on Lisa.
Lisa.
She is typing. And she's typing here, let me find out what she's typing. And she's typing rapidly, and it says, you will not be saved by the Holy Ghost. You will not be saved by the God Plutonium. In fact, all caps, you will not be saved.
It really made me laugh. In fact, you will not be saved. It's basically like under any circumstances. Yeah.
Really, to cut to the chase, you will not be saved.
And then they all attack Calder because Calder's walked into this room and Susan is still in there. Lisa's now infected. So they jump on top of him and Susan kisses him. And the sound effect of this kiss is so disgusting. Kind of sounds like a bong, honestly. It's just like in bubbling water of just, you know, that there's Satan's fluid being squirted into his mouth. Yeah, but it's a really nasty sound effect.
Yeah. You know, there's you know, if I were feeling like really pretentious, there's like an argument to make it. This movie is like commenting on the AIDS crisis because of all like the kind of the vaguely sexual nature of like the transmission the fluid and all that stuff.
It's the right time period.
Yeah, it'd be the right thing. But I don't think that's what's going on here. But it's sort of like it's thematically resonant. The thing I wanted to mention is that the other crazy thing that happens before hell breaks loose is they all see Frank out still in the parking lot. They all go look to see what he's doing. And when we cut to Frank, he's like bathed in darkness. And then the camera does a zoom and you see like beetles and stuff crawling all over his body. Remember, Frank has been killed. Frank is dead.
Yeah, it was like he was the one who got impaled.
He got shears.
Oh, the shears. Ew, yeah.
But then he starts to speak and he says, I've got a message for you and you're not going to like it. And then Brian goes, look at his chest. And then Frank opens his chest and then a swarm of beetles appears. Frank says, pray for death. And then his body parts fall off and his head falls off and the entire thing collapses into beetles. Oh, my God.
It's really a very creepy scene, but he's got this very warbled, robotic sounding voice that just goes, pray, I've got something to tell you and you're not going to like it. Pray for death.
I love that line so much.
It's so good.
It's so funny. Just prepare yourselves. It's not good news.
You're not going to like it.
Satan in this movie is very, he's very kind of like, he's very, a little cheeky, you know? He's like,
he's cheeky.
That
fun.
Tracks with what I would expect from Satan. I feel like he's always having
a
little fun.
He's trying to have fun. He's trying to have fun.
He's a little stinker, that guy. Little troublemaker.
Is anyone not infected or dead yet? Are they all infected?
At this point, our kind of like cast of characters who are not infected are the professor, not infected, not dead. Brian, not infected. Walter, not infected. The priest, Catherine. Kelly is, something's weird going on with Kelly.
Thumbs up with her bruise.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I think that's it. It's like there's one other kind of generic white guy who like doesn't really talk, and he eventually gets Scott during like, you know,
it's hard to keep track of all of them. There are probably like 10 to 15 people. Right. So,
but as far as people who are speaking in the movie,
our like core group.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have Walter ends up in the room with Kelly and Lisa and Susan.
He first tries to leave and the homeless people have now like barricaded them in. Like there's a moment in which they realize that some shit is going down and they're trying to leave and they've now, the doors are blocked. Okay. They can't leave. So yeah, he runs into that room where they've brought the cylinder into now to be near Kelly.
He cannot get out. And so he ends up going into a closet and locking the door. But he can still see what's happening. And on the other side, in another room, kind of adjacent, Brian and Catherine, I guess this room is sort of where all their equipment set up, Brian and Catherine there, and they can kind of talk to him. So they're going to try to break the wall so that Walter can get out. And it's during all of this that Walter is telling them what is happening. And what is happening is that the liquid has gone into Kelly. And it looks like all of it. And it looks like she's pregnant now. And so
with liquid?
The way that it goes in though is through her mouth and eyes. It's from above, like jets down into her facial orifices. It's a really upsetting.
So now
way
she's
to
like
get
the Virgin
there.
Mary. She's like the Virgin Mary.
Yeah.
And Susan and Lisa are keeping watch over her, keeping watch over this process. The others are trying to get Walter out. Walter is updating them on what happened. We cut back after a bit. Kelly is no longer pregnant, but she's developing sores all over her body.
Ew. That's when sores are one of the worst things.
Yeah, it's like, pretty gross.
It's really, we talk a lot about, you know, people getting slashed, people are getting impaled, but to have a bunch of sores is really upsetting.
It almost looks like burns, like chemical burns. I just rewatched Chernobyl, sorry. And
oh no.
It was a rewatch of Chernobyl?
It's such a good show, Henley.
No, it is.
When
no, you're right.
Jared Harris, her beloved.
I love Jared Harris, but her skin, yeah, looks like chemical. It's like white and red. She's almost looking like she's inside out.
Yes. She eventually wakes up. At this point, Walter is like screaming, desperate to get away. She wakes up. They get through to Walter. Susan and Lisa begin to get to Walter. And so there's a scramble for him to get out. At this point, someone else gets infected. And it's one of the guys who like, you know.
Who cares? Yeah,
who cares?
Just a guy.
Yeah. He's a guy. He's a guy. Mm-hmm.
And they fight off Lisa, who they end up throwing through the window.
Yep.
And she dies.
Yeah, they're it's just like full out fighting hand-to-hand combat with little spawns of Satan.
And does the Satan in them make them like stronger than they should be, or are they just sort of taken over and still, you know, human?
I don't think they're necessarily stronger.
Okay.
Cuz they seem
so
to be able to
beat
them.
We can take them down if we try hard.
Right. I think it's sort of like they're possessed, and so there's, you know, they're probably stronger than they would be in everyday life because there's no sort of like mental inhibition.
Uh-huh. Fear.
Yes. Right. They're just going for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So we cut to Kelly, she's awake. She is completely covered, and she's like, looks grotesque, like completely covered in sores. She looks down at a mirror, and you might be thinking, oh, she sees who she is and she's horrified. No, that's not what's happening. She picks up the mirror. She looks at it. She kind of hisses, "Father," and starts to put her hand into the, it's like a makeup mirror. She starts to put her hand into it. The mirror starts to glow, and her hand, but doesn't quite fit. And she gets furious and throws it down and begins searching for something. The priest this entire time has been in another room. Lomax, who is he's the only black character, and he's a tall black guy, and he's infected. He cuts his throat after he's infected. This is early in the film.
That one really, because it's not with a knife; it's with a broken chair leg. And it's small, and he like stabs himself in the neck with a like blunt piece of wood.
He's like singing. Ew. He's like singing a gospel hymn, and then like does it.
Holy shit!
That one was brutal.
And then he's passes out, but then he gets back up, still infected, still under the control of Satan, and he's sort of like kind of in this room, I guess, looking for the priest, and the priest is hiding from him. But in this room is a giant mirror. So there's this here giant mirror. Lomax is there. Kelly makes her way into here. Brian is
it's just everyone's caught in
everyone's
their own
fighting.
Little fights.
Brian's fighting off someone. Walter
priest
just fought
praying.
Off Lisa.
Priest is praying to God.
Priest is praying to God. And as Kelly goes to the mirror, it starts to glow. And she starts to put her hand through it. I should say that at this point, two other characters have had the dream, and the dream is getting progressively more clear what the message is. And the full message from the dream is that what they are hearing, what they are seeing, is a tachyon transmission from the year 199. You are receiving this broadcast in order to alter the events you are seeing. Our technology has not developed a transmitter strong enough to reach your conscious state of awareness, but this is not a dream. You are seeing what is actually occurring for the purpose of causality violation. And key in this sort of grainy footage is the figure emerging from the church is a cloaked figure. But anyway, we're back. Kelly's trying to get into this mirror. She's putting her hand in. When she puts her hand in, it's sort of like an ocean of liquid on the other side. And you see another hand begin to reach for hers. And she's hissing, "Father."
Huge hand. The other hand is really big.
Gigantic.
Okay.
And she clutches it and begins to pull this hand out. And you begin to see it, and it is like a demonic hand that's coming out of this mirror.
Pretty classic Satan hand.
Right. Do you think they did the thing like that they do in the Lord of the Rings movies where like for that shot, it was like a child holding an adult's hand to make it look really big?
Oh, maybe.
I don't know. I love that stuff. I get so excited when I watch Lord of the Rings and I'm like, that's a little kid. Like, it used to, you know, I don't know. Makes me happy.
Everyone's fighting. Catherine is running down the hallway. She sees Brian fighting. She runs past this room with Lomax and with Kelly and with the mirror. The priest has an axe and he's like trying to, I think he first tries to like knock out Lomax. He tries to do something and it doesn't work, but he has his axe and Kelly's pulling this demon out of this mirror and Brian's fighting. And everyone's struggling, and Catherine, realizing that she's the only one with freedom of action, runs and pushes Kelly through the mirror. She falls through the mirror, and then the priest throws the axe at the mirror, breaking it. And we get this shot of Kelly anguished, her hand reaching out for the mirror that she can't get back through.
Catherine is on the other side.
On the other side.
Oh, Catherine's on the other
Catherine
side.
Catherine went through also.
Sorry, I get it. Catherine. So Catherine and Kelly are now on the other side.
She pushed her. Both went through.
Yes.
A little self-sacrifice.
And she can't get back through because they smashed it.
They can't get back through.
No.
And then what we see is that for all of the possessed, they kind of just like, they die. And like a puff of breath comes out of their mouth. And that is sort of like the spirit of Satan, like leaving their bodies. They're no longer possessed. The homeless people disperse. They're back to normal.
Walter just runs out. Doesn't really even talk to anyone. He just beelines. He's like, I'm out of here.
Fair. Honestly.
Respect. Yeah.
Yeah.
The police show up. The priest and the professor are like, you know, we've done it. We've stopped this thing. We're successful. Brian is distraught because Catherine is dead, as far as he knows. And that seems like the end of the movie. We get into resolution at the church, but then we get kind of basically a kind of post-credit scene. The first thing is we get the dream again, the transmission, and it's in full, it's a full message, but instead of a cloaked figure coming out of the church, it's someone who looks a lot like Catherine coming out of the church.
Oh.
And the full year is 1999. So it's from the future, not the past.
Oh.
And you realize at this point that the Brotherhood of Sleep, all like for millennia, they've been getting this transmission too. That's the dream they've been having, this transmission.
Oh, and that's why it's the Brotherhood of Sleep, right? Because they get it while they're asleep.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But what you learn, right, is that they did change the future, but not the event, just who would be the vessel.
Okay.
Brian wakes up. He looks to his side and he sees what appears to be Catherine as sort of like the sore covered vessel of Satan.
Oh, no.
Then he wakes up again. It's a double dream.
Pretty good jump scare, too.
Yeah, it's a pretty good jump scare. He wakes up again and he looks at a mirror and then he reaches his hand out to the mirror and cut to black. Movie over.
It's like like an Inception ending, like just before he touches the mirror. So we don't know
if
this portal is open. Great ending.
But there's another Third movie.
We need to do a Mouth of, what is it? Mouth of Madness?
In the Mouth of Madness.
Yeah.
We need to do it immediately.
We're going to do it. We're going to do it.
Well, they're not like direct sequels. They're just like thematic. Because the thing, this isn't a sequel to The Thing.
Right.
They're
just
a thematic trilogy.
Yeah. The idea is like each one of these movies is how the end of the world begins.
I love that.
The Apocalypse trilogy.
Oh, that's fucking cool. Man, John Carpenter is so cool.
He really rules.
Like, it's really, man, that's
I want him to make another movie, really, but he seems very happy right now, like playing Xbox and making music.
Yeah, good for him. Honestly, he doesn't owe it to us.
Oh, no, of course not.
But I love this concept of everyone dreaming the same dream. That is so eerie and spooky, and I would like to see that more in other horror movies.
Well, just like, there's just dream scenario. It wasn't a horror movie, but the Nicolas Cage movie where everyone has dreams of Nicolas Cage. But yeah, it is a very scary concept, and I'm surprised it hasn't been done more. Maybe it will.
We talk about
now.
Our dreams all the time.
I was going
to
say,
imagine if they started to be the exact same.
We should keep talking about our dreams.
Just in case.
How do you know if you don't share it?
Especially since it's sort of like it, because the movie doesn't totally spell out for you like the implications of the dream. It kind of lets you figure out what is actually happening. It is like really weird and eerie to think that sort of like, yeah, for much of human history, people have been having this dream that just did not make any sense to them.
Yes.
And for the first group of people for whom it possibly could make sense, too late. Can't do anything about it.
Yeah. You know, I don't think I've ever had a dream that in the dream, I've had dreams where I've realized it was a dream, but I'm just going to say this now. If any of us ever have a dream where in the dream we are told, this isn't a dream, this is for real, just tell somebody. Just let somebody know.
And anybody.
Just in case.
Just listen, tell someone.
I know you're not going to believe that this is real, but trust me.
But just,
it's real.
You know, I just,
when you wake up, tell someone.
Tell someone. And just if that happens, what do you have to lose by telling someone? You know, it's just all I'm saying is just...
True.
Have you guys had dreams where you woke up in the dream?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
That is the worst. That is the worst.
I hate that. That is the worst feeling.
My least to wake up in a dream
is when I wake up and I'm still dreaming, but I'm in my bed, like in the normal place, and I'm like trying to move my body, but I'm still asleep. Yes. But I'm like
sleep paralysis.
Yeah, it's like a sleep paralysis, but it's not necessarily scary. It's just like very frustrating. I'm like, but I'm awake and I'm trying to get up and then I'm not awake.
Mm-hmm.
So that's happened to me too.
I don't really remember any of my dreams.
You know, I often don't remember mine either.
I go through phases.
And I'm sad about that. I really want to cultivate that more in my life. I want to be able to remember my dreams.
I don't know how you cultivate it. I mean, I guess maybe you can, but
I mean, how frustrating too if you're like, what, God, essentially, who do we think is transmitting these dreams? And your person wakes up and they're like, I guess I didn't really dream last night. It's like, God, no. It was really important.
Why won't God speak to me? God's like, I keep sending you messages.
What am I supposed to do?
Stop leaving me on red. I wanted to say real quick with the dream sequences in this movie. So they're in this like fuzzy kind of like CVTV kind of thing. And the way they did it is they just filmed it regularly, then like played it on a VHS and then filmed that and what's cool is that like you can very clearly see that is sort of like the origin of like found footage. It's a very found footage effect.
Yes.
And I feel like that is like the beginning point of like the found footage technique in a film. Cause I can't recall seeing it in anything prior to Prince of Darkness.
And I always find found footage films very scary. There is something scary about that.
Yeah, if we could give that to Carpenter, damn. We owe him a lot.
I was wondering, there is a moment in the film where one of them says, like, we just need to cover this building with concrete and never come in here again. And I kind of think that might have worked.
Yeah, probably.
Because we find out that it needed a vessel of some sort. And so they're all like, no, that'll never work. Like, we need to make sure this doesn't happen. And it's just by them being there as human bodies that they ensure that it does happen. So should have listened to that guy.
Yeah.
Damn.
Too bad. Too bad. Man, that was good.
Jamel, will you let our listeners know where they can find you and what you've got going on?
Sure. So my day job is a columnist in the New York Times. So you can find me if you subscribe at the Times. Usually every Tuesday and Friday I have a column, and I have a Saturday newsletter. If you don't read the Times for whatever reason, doesn't bother me, but I get it. Then you can find me. I have a podcast with my friend John Gans, who's an author. It's called Unclear and Present Danger, where we watch the political and military thrillers of the post-Cold War period of the 90s, basically. And we talk about them and kind of situate them historically. And we have a Patreon where we do that for the movies of the Cold War. And I think the last thing we did for the Patreon was the Odessa File, which is a what's his name? Angelina Jolie's dad. John Voight movie.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
About sort of like secret Nazis in 60s Germany. And then for the main feed, the last movie we did was The Substitute, which is with Tom Berenger. And if you've never seen The Substitute, the best way I can describe it is like Lean on Me, except the teacher beats the shit out of the kids.
Jesus Christ.
Okay.
Compelling stuff.
All right. I can see how that got made. I mean, that's a rock solid pitch.
So yeah, that's where you can find me, those two places. And I'm on I'm on TikTok, and
I watch a lot of Jamel's TikTok videos. I'm not gonna lie.
Henley does love TikTok.
And they're informative. They're actually informative and useful TikTok videos. So unlike 90% of my TikTok feed. So got to get the information somewhere. Thank you.
Well, thank you for watching my TikToks. So they're mostly informative. Some of them are me watching people like butcher chickens, and I'm just like, grading it.
Yes.
That sounds fun.
It's kind of a bit.
That does sound fun.
Yeah, so that's where you can find me.
Great.
And thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being here.
I will also say that I follow Jamel on Letterboxd, so he didn't throw that out there, but...
Yeah, I am on Letterboxd. Sometimes I write, real reviews of stuff. Sometimes I write things like... I think I saw Porco Rosso, the Miyazaki film, and I think my review was, I love the pig man.
Yep.
Mm. Great.
So...
That's all we need.
That's what Letterboxd is for, to be honest.
Those are most of my reviews. I reviewed, Princess Mononoke.
Oh, okay.
Mm.
And my review of that was just that the little deer friend is my best friend. It's like, he's my best friend. I love him.
I love the deer. Oh. Whenever the deer got hurt, I got so worried.
Yes. I'm like, he's my best friend. Please. I love him.
Don't hurt him. I love him. Wow. What a real treat. This was a great time.
This was very mm-hmm. fun.
We don't always get a great time.
And no, we do not. No, we do
really
not.
It's really nice when we do.
I'm surprised you guys don't feel emptiness and dread after this.
I honestly don't. Just because Carpenter rules. I can just picture what it's just, I'm kind of amped.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Same.
So
it's great. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll say the scariest John Carpenter's, I think In the Mouth of Madness is probably scarier.
Yeah.
Okay.
I find The Thing, utterly terrifying. I love really that movie, but I remember the first time I saw it and I was like, these are some of the most grotesque things I've ever witnessed in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the fact that it's dogs is we don't want that. We don't want that.
Right. Right.
Don't ruin dogs.
Don't make it dogs.
He has an amazing hat in that, right? Isn't that
really
the hat?
Big hat?
Yeah.
The hat is a good huge big hat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A good big hat can save any movie.
The director's commentary that Kurt Russell does with John Carpenter, he says, Joel and I say it to each other all the time, kind of a scene about a hat. just love the hat.
Okay, Jamel, thank you so much for joining us. This was very fun. We end every episode with a voice from the movie. I will close this out with the warbly Frank Bugman voice.
Ooh, Bugman.
Which is impossible to do. It's like a robotic voice, but I'm going to do my version of it.
Okay.
Great.
So from all of us here at Too Scary Didn't Watch, pray for death.
Yeah.
Thank you, my friends, for listening to another episode of Too Scary Didn't Watch. If you had fun hanging with us, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We're also on Twitter and Instagram at TSDW Podcast. And if you're interested in things like bonus episodes, video trailer reactions, and other cool content, head on over to patreon.com/TSDW Podcast. All right, we love you all forever and ever, starting a while ago and continuing into eternity. Adios.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.